wage. Penfield on the Voyager album. From Andromeda with Love. I helped write that. Actually, I did the... What did I do on that song? The rhythm and a whole bunch of stuff. Well, tonight we are with what we call his royal host, Steve Barish, or what do we call you now?
just regular Steve Barish, I guess.
Now, what's been happening with you? I hear you've had some royal treatment here.
Yeah, I got a phone call from Ken Oda, the Prince of Japan, and his dad was getting an award in New York City. I believe he was being given an award for saving the whales and saving porpoises, and also for saving a lot of the shell life in Okinawa. And Ken had called me because his dad had not slept correctly for the last couple months, and his low back was killing him, and he was getting charley horses in both his legs. And his mom needed some help. But anyhow, I finally just psychically sent him energy and repaired his back as best I could and his legs. And I called him on Sunday morning. It was Saturday night when I sent him that energy, and he knew about me because Ken had told him I was going to help him out, and he said he never slept so well, and his back and his low spine were feeling much, much better. And his mom had a serious heart operation last year, and she wasn't feeling so good, and so I psychically went over and did some work on her heart and her valves and the veins and arteries. And from what I understand, Ken told me that she was doing a lot better. So they've invited me to Japan, and they've invited me to Okinawa. So I might take him up on that. So it was really a nice time talking to Ken Oda and his dad.
Yeah, how old is his dad now?
His dad, I think, is like 80... I think like 82, 83, and Ken's got to be 60-something or other.
Yeah, Ken used to be, you know, back in the day, when Ken and I were both very, very young guys, we used to go out and have a few sakis together. Most Orientals are somewhat conservative, you know, on partying.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they could party. No, it's more to party. Party you down. He's
yeah.
a very responsible person. He's connected. One time he brought a guy over to my house in Laguna who was the chairman of the board of, I don't know, 250 companies at least. Of,
wow.
That's a lot of companies. Some of them were little $200,000 a year companies. Some of them were multi-billion-dollar a year companies. And
wow.
We stayed in contact for many, many years. And the guy was really awesome. He's very, very famous in Japan.
Uh-huh.
Very, probably one of the richest guys over there. Ken Oda's dad, I remember him when he was governor of Okinawa, and the Marines down there had raped some local girls. And as a result, he almost got the military kicked out of there. But the Marines were located. There's always a few bad apples in the barrel. I love Marines. I live right next to a Marine base, but there's always a few bad ones, and this created an international deal, and his dad presided over that. Dad retired. I think he ran for election. He was 8 years as governor of Okinawa, which is
right.
royalty, and then he retired, I guess, about 10 years ago. I mean, just, I've known these guys for 30 years, so. You know, his dad's a Tai Chi master, martial artist, graduated from was New York University.
I think it was Syracuse.
At Syracuse University.
Syracuse University, yes.
And he also attended a couple other colleges. He speaks, I don't know how many languages, than I do. I don't even speak one properly.
Well, he's an interesting guy. His language was very good. He was glad that I called him. Very, very nice person, very personable.
Yeah, a few of my friends have gone over there because I've introduced them to Ken, and nobody's complained. They put you in the nicest hotels, that you get fed the best of food, and they really take care of you. They're very they don't hold back on the financial part of it.
Yeah,
it's a custom in Japan, because I've been there a few times myself, actually several times, is that when you first get there. You don't do anything for 2 or 3 days. You get rid of the jet lag. They don't like to mix jet lag with business.
Right.
And I think that with your understanding, we didn't have the projectors in those days last time I was over there, so it'd be real interesting to see what happened, you know, with those.
Yeah, it'd be fun to take a few over and see how they like them.
So now what I want to do... I have a friend of mine sent me a video, it's a 6-minute video,
mm-hmm.
Of the Finland's health minister, okay?
Oh.
And the reason that I'm using Finland is because we are working on this X1, it's called QBAM, which
mm-hmm.
is a quantum biological adjustment machine.
Right.
We're starting on that now, and in fact, I got some of the hardware in for it for today. Today it came in the mail. And so we're working with through the United Nations with several countries on these projects. And so I'm going to just play this thing. It is six. It's almost 7 minutes long. But I think, you know, when you start listening to a government, a person of a very, fairly wealthy and well-respected country, I think you're going to be taken aback by what this lady has to say. And we are going to, in about a minute or so here, as soon as I get the thing queued up again, I got my regular sidekick besides Steve didn't want to work tonight. And so we have Buddy on the shoulder. He's a little younger, so he might be distracting me a little bit. So anyhow, we're going to go ahead and let me know if you can hear this okay when I get it going.
Are forcing on us.
Yeah, well, Americans are mostly forcing it. You know, the American companies.
Can you hear it okay, Steve?
With,
yeah,
with
fine.
Modified, food and
a very respected
like
lady
and
over there.
No, and nobody knows what's going to happen because they experiment on long range. And we don't know what happens in a year or 20 years. Just like we don't know what happens, except we start knowing now, what happens with monoclonal homes in 20 years. You know, they cause brain tumors and blindness and deafness and cancer and whatever. It's totally, totally known. But it's experimentation on the long range.
Do you think that those frequencies and those devices are specifically selected best on us? Do you think they're changing the species or trying to kill us or change us?
Well, at least they're making us very sick. And since the goal that I have read of the elite, if I can use that word, is to diminish our population on planet Earth by at least 2/3, maybe even 5 billion. So that's very, very negative.
All that more. I mean, we're facing this new disease which is coming out.
Swine?
Swine flu.
Oh, that's just rubbish. That is really rubbish. You know, it's not the swine flu that's dangerous. It's the injections. Because it's supposedly, it's not only swine, but it is human virus mixed with swine virus, mixed with bird virus. And of course, behind the whole thing is to diminish world population because it's very toxic, and to get milliards and milliards and milliards into the pockets of those who put them out. Rumsfeld is an owner also in one of the bigger drug companies. And since they want to diminish the population, so they start saying that children and pregnant women are the first ones, eliminate the next generation.
So you've been trying to alert certain governments about this?
Not governments, but I have written information to Finland because I don't think it's going to work. Because even if WHO...
It has been tried before in the late 70s.
Yes, 76 they had in the States the swine flu, and it was stopped, the injections, after 3 weeks because so many people died or got Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is their neurology was destroyed. So now they're making a little adjustment and doing it the same. And before that, they have also made sure in the States that people don't get compensation for...
I'm just pausing it for a second, Steve.
Yeah.
That Lorette's syndrome is a central nervous system disease that many, many athletes are getting now from that take this and are being completely crippled. Isn't that sad?
Wow.
It's called the Lorette's syndrome. And this lady, you know, we talked about it about 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
30-year-old was a triathlete, is now crippled for life.
Yes.
That's what it's doing. So I'm going to continue on now. Just wanted to put that in there.
Damage in their health. Because previously, 76, they had to pay big amounts. Like, you know, in the States, the compensation is big when you destroy someone's health. But now they have a law in the States that these companies are not liable. Nothing in compensation if the patient is killed or if the patient is sick for life. So they have... really thought about it.
So they can poison us and kill us and get away with it. Stop, please.
That's right.
So how is this happening? How are so many governments allowing this?
Because they're not allowing it yet, because nobody has done anything yet. They are just having a scary program in the mass media. All mass media says, oh, it's going to be terrible. Now it's something, bum, bum, bum. It's a scary, scary, scary propaganda. And people get scared because they don't know. Now, WHO has ordered that, you know, everybody has to be by force injected. Previously, WHO did not have this ability to tell them to force any government because it was only recommendations. But it was 97, 98, I recall, that they signed with 194 states above that if there is a pandemic, or, you know, real serious pandemic, so then they give an order. Now, in the beginning already, in the beginning of June, WHO said pandemic 6, that's the highest. Now, go to any country in the world. People are not sick. There are not millions in swine influenza. So this was just done to force people and prepare the governments to give injections by force. But it's not going to work. I don't think Norway is going to do it.
The figures released by the World Health Organization are actually false.
Of course they are. Of course. Of course. But you have to remember, why do they do this? Always remember, who benefits? Who benefits? They have been forced, in my mind, to do this. And by whom? Big Pharma. Big Pharma, which is, you know, deals with the world population and the world money and all this. It's millions.
So what's the ultimate strategy do you think that's happening? What's the target? What's the intent?
The target is to get rid of so many people as possible and to get as much money for them as possible. But I think they have calculated wrong this time, because already in the Bilderberger meeting, the 14th and 15th of May this year, 1909, in Hellas, there was almost a split when they were discussing this. And I can well imagine that people normally, you know, attending do not always agree with Mr. Kissinger's plan to eliminate a great deal of the world population. And now, for instance, yesterday, the Finnish government made a decision, changed laws, which is very interesting. Changed laws that swine influenza is not anymore on the list of being a dangerous, serious, contaminating disease. And that means that, of course, then people have to pay for themselves. It's a money question, too. But in my mind, of course, this is a legal question for the lawyers. But in my mind, if something is not a dangerous, contaminatious disease, you cannot be forced to take an injection, right? So I think they were very, very smart. Also, I just read that from the Folk Institute of Health in Norway, that director had said that there has never been many meaning to force people to take, but they can take an injection, and I hope nobody does, especially not children, especially not pregnant women, and actually nobody.
That's pretty interesting, huh?
Yeah, that's serious stuff. I mean, that's, you know... They're not the only countries, I think, that that are really up in arms about this. I think most of the countries are up in arms.
Oh, yeah, they are. You know, she mentioned Rumsfeld, everything that we've been talking about since since February, practically.
Yep.
The world governments, I mean, are getting involved now, and she's involved. She's the Prime Minister of Health of Finland. She's probably equivalent to a vice president over here, and very, very, a very handsome woman, and in very good shape, doesn't get sick, takes care of herself. And she, you know, and we talked about the Haig Kissinger depopulation policy that was originally discovered back in 1981 at the Lyndon LaRoche publication, not Inside Track, but... Oh, the name, I forget the name of the thing right now. I'll get it in a minute. But anyway, and that's when it was called the Haig-Kissinger depopulation policy. And it came out that whole Vietnam War was to just gas people with malathion. They finally admitted it. We all knew that malathion was developed in the 50s for birth control in Japan. So
right.
How stupid do you have to be to take these shots? And, so on the Inside Track, the book that I just finished, all this is in there in tremendous detail, but it's just, you know, we wrote about this a year ago, and now it's happening.
Yep.
And the people are wondering, going, huh? And then the scares, you know, she talks about the scares.
Yep.
Finland's not going for it, that's for sure.
I think there's a lot of people in this country that are not going for it.
Yeah.
They realize what's going on.
I've talked to people around here lately, and Californians in general don't want anything to do with it. It's really amazing. I mean, all over the state are not going for this stuff.
Well, I've been telling my clients that all this stuff is man-made.
Well,
they really want to depopulate the earth, and that's what they're trying to do. The Rumsfeld, who, as far as I'm concerned, is a Nazi, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, he always has been.
You know, I just feel that we have people in this country that actually shouldn't even be here. They should be in jail.
Yeah, well, he's one of them. Because he controls the World Health. You know, he's a Tavistock guy, which which is the main ingredient behind the whole thing is Tavistock, but out of England. But bottom line is he's probably picked up 50-60 million by now.
Easy.
That's just because he has 5,000 shares of Gillenmead, which is going through the roof. And he also put the FDA back in his first term, back when Gerald Ford was president, he was the defense minister then, and he fired the FDA commissioner and put in his own man, and he's had his own men in there ever since. And the what he was trying to push at that point was asparidine, and everybody knows now that that stuff's poison. So
yeah.
I had one guy, I was about to be institutionalized, and I had him as a patient, and I took him off of it. And he says, what else do I need to do? I says, all you got to do is stop taking this, and you're going to be okay. He didn't believe me.
Yeah.
He didn't think asparagine would do this. Well,
yeah.
After I worked with him for a week and helped him detox, and he got his head back together, you know, he says, I can't believe it. It took me, he says, if you hadn't forced me for a week to stay off this stuff, he was stuck on it.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a drinker or anything. He was stuck on asparagine. He was hooked on it, and I got him off of it. And his mental condition improved, and he went at one point almost a billionaire, and had pretty much lost everything because he's losing his mental health, and now he's got his mental health back.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Yeah. It's amazing that this country, the freest country on the planet, is trying to release toxins that are so... Hello?
Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah, this is Mark from Ohio. I had a few questions for Dr. Bell.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
I heard you on another radio show recently talking about Project Bluebeam.
Yeah, that over at Dick the Butler show?
No, it was actually Mel Fabregas.
Oh, Mel, yeah. Haven't heard from him lately, yeah.
Yeah, Ed, you were talking about these internment camps that have been created, and I wondered if you could kind of review some of that and go back over that and kind of fill in a little more detail there.
Which type of cancer are you concerned about?
Well, you had talked about this Project Bluebeam, and then one part of it were these internment camps that are being created to house people that are not going to cooperate with the New World Order.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's about 800 of them now. The biggest one is in Indianapolis. I forget what they call the damn thing. It's Camp Something. It's got a name. Alex Jones named it, I think. Somebody did. It's got two crematoriums bigger than the ones that were at...
Buchenwald and...
Huh?
Bigger than Buchenwald. Bigger than...
Exactly, exactly. And those are pretty good size. There's two of them. The gas pipes are 6 inches in diameter feeding them. To get an idea, that's a big gas pipe. And there's a pair of those. And they have a train spur coming in, so they drive the train in. They have the unloading area for the train in three different colors, red, green, and blue, meaning the red people are going to be cremated immediately. The green people probably later on, and the blue people maybe not at all. It's, you know, depends on, and then they go into three different, they look like, they have to get off the train, they go through turnstiles into these high chain link fences. I've seen it. I've seen this stuff. And then they go off into three different sections. Now, immigration is using it right now. The U.S. Army is in charge of all of them. They've built quite a number of them. This particular place, I forget what it was before. It was some other kind of a compound for a big company, and then they converted it. And they spent a lot of taxpayer money on it, a huge amount of taxpayer money on it. And then they tried to use Fox Network to see how much of a scare they could put in people back in the latter part of September, early part of October, declaring that these shots, these demonic shots, were going to be mandatory. Of course, that didn't go over too well. That's how fascism works. They'll do a little fishing. They'll cast. They have a good casting rod. They'll cast out an idea, see how the population responds. If they don't get a good response, then they'll reel in the fishing hook and wait a while. And that's the same exact thing they've been doing now with the this concocted virus, which works off of, once you get injected with it, it then goes off air vectors, things that they sprayed in the air to bring about destruction. And, of course, the first attempt at doing something on this was back in 1976. But they didn't get very far with it because nobody was buying it.
Now,
of course, in 1997, Dr. Tannenbaum out of Fort Dix went ahead and redid the virus, the script, what they call the script on the virus again, made it more where it would go faster into the population. And then they started working on their vaccines at the same time. And somebody interviewed him about that and asked him why he did that. And he said, well, that's so we can test these vaccines. And that was a stupid answer.
Yeah.
And the comment was, well, if you're going to test the vaccines, why would you have to do that if you don't have the virus until you created it? And he really couldn't answer that one. You know, I mean, he shut him down real quick.
Yeah. Do these groups, I mean, is the group that's responsible for this, it almost seems to me when you do the research that this group must have been around a long time, that it almost, whoever's responsible for these actions, it seems to span a normal human lifetime.
Well, yeah, there's two things that are put in place. Back at the turn of the century, the banking system, the groundwork for the bank, around 1913, the Federal Reserve Bank started to get legs put on it and screwed into the ground over here. It's the same plan that the monarchies have used for centuries over in Europe. I mean, this is a standard model. When you come into a company that's trying to become democratic, you lay down the banking institutions first. Then the next thing you do is you do the health institutions. You bring them in. And in this case, the health institutions came originally during World War II, financed by Nelson Rockefeller and the Bilderbergers, the IG Farben Company. The IG Farben Company became, you know, during World War II, did a lot of bad things to the Jewish people. And as a result, at the end of World War II at Nuremberg, 30 of the executives were tried and convicted of stupid things. And as a result, the company was reformed. IG Farben was formed into six subcultures and all of these sub-companies, and they were mostly brought over here. So you end up with Sandoz, Switzerland, you end up with, you know, Roche Laboratories, Parker. These big companies all came from that. That's where the roots of the drug companies came from. I wrote about all this in my book in very great detail.
Yeah.
And so then what has to happen is in fascism, you know, they brought all these paperclip people over from Germany, including the IG Farben people that were really went through a mock trial, you know, because it was our money that made IG Farben what it was, and which also, by the way, employed Jewish, you know, slaves as workers.
Mm-hmm.
So now what happens is when they went through the manipulation of finances through the housing industry by selling off these contracts and jacking up the housing industry, they created a recession. In the middle of the recession, they go ahead and create a viral scare. And so then, of course, the drug companies make tons of money and come in and start killing people. And this has been a thing that's gone on for quite a while. It was done more through churches back in the, you know, 14th, 15th century. The church was really the power there. And the head bishop had power over the scientists, even, you know, the head bishop.
Mm-hmm.
The archdiocese and all that. But that's changed now to a one-world government. And that, of course, launched out of Tavistock, and that started in 1921 out of England, you know, which went on to form the World Health Organization, WHO, the lady was talking about WHO. That started right after a guy named, I forget his first name, his name is Dewey, had a mental health problem, and he went and got founded an institution, which then evolved pretty much into the WHO organization. It was an evolution that took place with some of the people that started Tavistock around 1920, 1921. It's in my book, the exact details. So it's not a big mystery. We have been able to unravel every single person involved. And I put up in my new book, The Inside Track, I put up the websites to go. If you want to go see what the Tavistock website looks like in Britain, you're welcome to go there. The names of people that were involved through the last 100 years are all in there, and their families. And it goes pretty deep on this stuff. You know, we didn't decided to let people really get educated this time. And then we set up that Rays of Truth website that's running now. And when you buy the book, we give you a free 30-day trial on the website. And the website is a continuation of my book. And there is probably 3 times as much information going up on that website as is in my book. Give you an idea how big program we've made out of this Insight Track program.
Well, Dr. Bell, I just want to tell you, you are just an incredibly knowledgeable person, and I was so impressed listening to you on Mel's interview. I'm going to try to start listening to your show a little more often, and I'm also going to try to get your book. And I'll ask one more question and then get off the air here and let other people call in. I remember in the interview that I listened to, I think you talked about playing some kind of Pleiadian sounds or something along those lines.
Yeah. In the X1 healing program, we're going to actually use these sounds.
You also talked about some sounds that you played that were chasing out Zeta Reticulan ships that were
buried in there. That's on my synthesizer right behind me, actually, that sound. It's a sound that we created by mixing the sound of a Pleiadian ship with some other things that we did with a Roland D50 synthesizer. It's a linear arithmetic synthesizer capable with sound generators, capable of doing the harmonic intonation of a Pleiadian sound. Mm-hmm. That's really, in simple terms, is called the timber. And the timber is like the difference between a piano and a violin. And the Pleiadians have what's called an S-curved flute. And I've been a flute player now myself for 5 years. Not very good at it, but I get the job done. But the S-curved flute is where you have two people playing a long flute-like instrument, each one blowing from the other end, so the sound comes out in the middle. It's a harmony of the two players. And it creates such a quantum effect on the ethers that it actually releases a photon of light into the visible spectrum. So when this flute is played, you see this liquid light moving around. It's really beautiful to see it coming right out of nowhere. It's just the space itself around you starts to vibrate. And the light starts flashing off. It's like having your own lightning bolt show in your house without the electrical hazards, you know.
That's really amazing. Thank you so much. And I'll listen off the air. And again, thanks for all that you do. Bye-bye.
Oh, you're welcome.
That was a cool
thing. How are the projectors and effectors and all the stuff working right now?
Everything seems to be very powerful in my room. I've been using a lot of projectors, and I'm using my projector that I wear and the nuclear receptor both at the same time. And there's a tremendous amount of power coming through, and I'm really enjoying it. Really enjoying it.
Send some of that energy to the royals of Japan?
I think that's what's happening. I know that the energy that I'm passing is a lot more powerful now than what it was a year or two ago. So I suspect it's coming from the projector and the receptor both.
Yeah, the receptor seems to starting to become quantum in its operation now, more quantum than Taylor, because consciousness is allowing that.
Yes.
The more entanglement that takes place, the more instant photons, instant light that you're able to create. And
so the power of it seems to be very, very powerful, Fred, more than I've ever remembered it before. And I wear it all the time, and I've actually, for some odd reason, I don't know why, Fred, but I've gone through the back of my receptor. I have no idea why. I don't know why I'm being shown that. All I know is I see a beam of light going through the diamond, and I can actually look through and see the other side of it. So there's a lot going on with the projector and the receptor seems to be really vibrating at a very high rate.
Yeah, they're definitely a lot more powerful now than they were. That's because of quantum entanglement. That's what life itself is.
Yeah.
In this world, it is an entangling process. That's why our children, for example, and future generations are not smarter than the previous generation.
People born
at the turn of the century, the level of genius there versus now, find a much higher group of people that are a lot smarter.
Yes.
Now, of course, we have the notables that we wrote about in the book that made, like Einstein, Niels Bohr, all those people that made tremendous contributions. But there weren't a lot of Einsteins and Niels Bohrs around, Now there's lots of them now. They just haven't, been discovered because there's so many of them now that they're not handing out peace prizes for, the things they handed out in those days. And so they don't become the notables yet. But the bottom line is far more peace prizes going out than ever before and to a younger and younger generation. There's going to be a lot of stuff going out on this quantum field.
I had a person that I've been working with for about 3 years, and we had lunch the other day, and we were discussing how beautiful the necklaces really work, and I was telling him the amount of love that I feel from these necklaces. And his body started to vibrate, Fred. It was vibrating at such a high rate that his hair was standing on edge. I could actually see the hair on his arm standing up. And he said, "Steve, I've got so much energy running through me." He said, "What are you doing?" I said, "All I'm speaking about is love." And I had on the projector and the receptor, and I just felt this nirvana of energy just shooting through me, and it hit him so hard that he was really excited. So I think people that are wearing these necklaces without even knowing it, Fred, are at such a high vibration that if they've worn them for a long time, they probably don't even feel it.
No, you get used to the subtle changes.
Yes.
I wear mine most of the time, except when doing some hard labor or something, I have to take it off so I don't catch a shovel on it or something. But they're working a lot better now, and it's interesting because the clientele is much more across the board with society now. We got some college professors and medical doctors to students, to healthcare people, all using them now. Before we had a very limited audience for these things. Now it's a very broad audience. There's a word of mouth. We don't advertise except when we do a show.
Right.
And then we'll advertise a little bit on a page there, the local paper for that,
I'm finding it so interesting because a lot of my clients are now really on the up with the energy, and even the clients, my new clients that are coming in, are starting to realize that there's a lot more energy than they ever thought. And they're sort of seeking me out and asking me a lot of questions. And I said, "Why don't you try this on and see how it reacts with you?" And I'll put on my nuclear receptor, the big one I have. And boy, do they get sapped. But it's wonderful, Fred, because it shows them that there's a lot more energy than what they even possibly thought.
Yeah, a lot of people are so blocked. They're very.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, very bad eating habits, no exercise habits, and so they wonder. Their body just doesn't feel anymore. And so when you put one of these things on, you end up having a whole feeling experience.
It's almost like the only way I can put it is like sitting in a AA fuel dragster.
Yeah.
When you just take off, the energies that these necklaces are actually putting out are a lot more than what I thought they'd be 10 years ago or 8 years ago when I first started getting into these things. And so you're doing whatever you're doing, man. I mean, this new technology is really even better than the old technology. So
we've spent a lot of money retooling these things as we learn how to make them better.
Mm-hmm.
And then we retool. And when we retool, they work better.
Yeah.
A lot better, It's pretty much amazing how much better that they work. I'm surprised myself.
Yeah.
I've been wearing one for so long, and I'm used to it, but I definitely, when I'm not wearing it, notice that I'm not wearing it now.
Right.
A lot of people notice that when they first take it off, the ones that are less sensitive. And mm-hmm. and what I find is I'm not quite in that category. I could be, but I noticed that, well, I'm wearing it now. But at one point, I probably at one time, I was probably less sensitive because of my bad eating habits when I was younger. Remember, mm-hmm. I was a drag racer like you, and we all ate crappy. You know, I lived at the Taco Bell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I ate a lot of tacos. Yeah, that's about all I ate. In fact, I don't even remember eating anything. I never ate many salads, and I did this for a number of years. I just ate crap, and I used to get sick
mm-hmm.
all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then I worked at NASA 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, and drank a lot of coffee and smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day. I don't think I was what you would call a very good model of health, but I had arthritis
yeah.
from all that. And after that, I started cleaning my act up. It still took about 15 years.
Yeah, I'm starting to eat a lot more vegetarian than I am a meat eater. Once in a while, I'll have some meat, but I'm really, really having a lot of salads. I'm having a lot of vegetables. I'm eating a lot of tofu and different things of that nature to really get my act together. So it's tough, but it's something I need to do.
Yeah, it takes time to. I got to turn this. It takes time to. Change your body chemistry around.
Right.
Took me. I was a vegetarian for 7 years back in my early 30s, and then I became a fruitarian for a year to do some fat and exercises that required a high degree of purification in the body, or you die basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that, I kind of slipped back. Into some of my bad habits, but not quite as bad. But I guarantee you, when I was just a fruitarian, just eating fruit and nuts, my weight was only like 160 pounds. I'm almost 6 feet tall. I felt better than I ever had in my body. I never got sick, and the colors, my hearing was incredible, and my vision, the bandwidth of my vision was, you know, if you look at a tree, it was just glowing. You know, it wasn't
mm-hmm.
a green tree. It was like this thing was glowing, you know. You see
mm-hmm.
auras on everything.
Right.
Which is the way it should be, because we're very limited in our, you know, we can only see between 400 and 700 nanometers on the average. That's nothing in the spectrum of light. You know, that's nothing.
Right.
We only hear up to 10 or 12 kilohertz. That's nothing, you know, nothing. I mean, the human sound spectrum, just for an audio device like a synthesizer or guitar, is clear up to 20 kilohertz on a high note. Most people don't hear it.
Yep.
And you put these receptors on, or you go through a pyramid detox, one of our power domes. Boy, oh boy, that changes people around real quick.
You bet. I on my show, I'm coming back 1 in 2 weeks. What I do with people, I align them, and I'm wearing my nuclear receptor and projector both at the same time. And what I'm doing is that their peripheral vision is more.
Exactly.
And I tell them, I say, please, I need you to go near some beautiful flowers and see the difference in the quality of color. And what they'll do is they'll either go outside, take their friends with them outside, or they have flowers in the house, and they'll come back and say, wow, look at these colors. You know, it's extremely vivid. So there's nothing that we can't do. All we need to do is focus on it and, you know, just
when
be better.
When I became a contactee, the mm-hmm. Pleiadians had me, first of all, they put me on this purification thing, you know, with the fruit. That was part of their idea.
Okay.
And then I got a taste of what it was like. I pretty much maintained it somehow as best I could over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Then when we developed these products, it was a lot easier to cheat a little bit and still maintain
mm-hmm.
that, you know. But then I realized that wasn't when you're really fooling is yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The point here is this, that when you get up into the higher frequencies, you get into, when you look at a star and you see red, you know, it's moving towards us. and that's called redshift. It's higher wavelength, red, like a red laser, 700 angstrom. Actually, yeah, it's about right. So when it moves away, it's called blue shift, and the star is blue and goes to ultraviolet. Butterflies, okay, butterflies see in the ultraviolet range.
Okay.
So if you could see in the ultraviolet range, you can see these little fairies and these little little creatures that run around, like in England, they used to make a lot of paintings about Hyde Park over there and the fairies and the serpentine.
Okay.
Because the druids and the people of olden times in England and other countries lived without microwave in the air. No airplanes were flying over with, you know, range finders on them. There was no radar. There was no cell phones. None of that. So as a result, you didn't have the blockage.
Right,
and
right.
If you don't have the blockage, you can develop your ultraviolet vision. When you get it really good, then you can see clear across onto the other side, into the other, what we call the 11th membrane in the string theory in physics. But what you're really seeing is you're seeing over into the other side, and you begin to communicate with beings and stuff. Well, that's what the Pleiadians had me do to train me to be able to see into the second ether, because that's where they live. I mean... If you're not really, really up on your speed, their vibratory rate is so great that you'll see right through them. In other words, you won't see them at all.
Right.
But once you are able to see them and talk to them, then your feeling senses become acclimated, and then you can actually touch one, and you'll actually feel that person, whereas you wouldn't even feel them before. And,
right.
And so that's what happens. And then that fire star thing we developed, was a training device from the Pleiadians to make for people to make contact through the normal auric frequencies that run through the body, which run anywhere from DNA frequencies of several hundred megahertz down to 300 or 400 megahertz of common frequencies, clear down into the audiovisual spectrum, which is much lower. And so what happens is your body becomes like a spectrum analyzer, and you're able to see and hear a lot more in those dimensions. And when this happens, then you sort of become a contactee. And I found that being able to do that, I'm able to have all these parrots and communicate with them. And I know if one of them's going to bite me or not, because I can read their minds and feel their energies long before you get bit. I know when they're in a good mood or a bad mood. The females are always the ones that bite. The males pretty much never bite because they're not hormonal.
Okay.
You learn about all that stuff. And so as a result of being around these eclectus parrots, I picked up they teach you by frequency. And what has happened is my peripheral vision has become five times much stronger. I see more out of the corner of my eye than I almost do in the front. And so as a result, I'll be looking straight ahead, and I'll see a bird behind me in a tree now.
Wow.
Or I'll see some energy flash behind me or next to me that I would never have seen before.
Yeah.
At first, it's a little aggravating. It was a little aggravating when we moved out here from Laguna into the country. We didn't have all the, I haven't heard a horn honk probably since I've been into town. So that's been a few days. So I haven't heard a single honk of a horn. I haven't been around too many vehicles, just a few things today because we did a little cement work. But other than that, none. But I'm not breathing carbon monoxide, and the air is clean up here.
Yeah.
We're also in a valley, so we don't have a lot of radiation. Cell phones don't even work around our house here. They won't work. There's no towers that go in here. So we're in a quasi-environment of suppressed energy where you can actually go deep.
Right.
That's why we were able to take a picture of that Andromeda and dye the tree down there.
Yeah, that was interesting. I've had them in my room where I could see, and I knew that was very interesting when you took that picture of the Andromeda and how clear it was and how transparent it was. And that's how I see them in my room.
Yeah.
So I don't know where I'm at in that category, but I do see them. And I've had people where I'll take them out into I don't know why this happens, but I'll tell them to please touch the bud on the tree. And the tree will actually ignite into a beautiful white energy.
And you know, you could feel, you could actually see the tree glowing just from the love that comes from the fingertips. So there's a lot going on now, Fred, and I think I think people can be waking up to that and to really get serious with it. I think the nuclear receptor can take them to that level.
Yeah, it really helps a lot.
You bet it does.
The garbage you wear on your head, though, changes the frequency of the axons and nerves in your spinal cord. It makes them conduct a whole lot more electricity with a lot less effort, so it increases your electrical response to your outside connection.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing, too. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. I just find it so interesting that knowing you has opened me up to a lot of different energies and people, and it's really a lot of fun, so it's wonderful.
Yeah. So anyway, we are going to, Mikkel is making up some gift baskets that are going to be available on the Pyridyne website. I know there are a lot of people out there that go to our website on a pretty regular basis, but she's going to be developing some really nice energy jewelry that you wear with your receptor. Actually, she's already developed quite a bit of it.
Wow.
We're going to start putting, oh, yeah, she's a necklace that she's been making. They've got high-energy stones in them, and you wear them with your receptor. They're very inexpensive for what they are.
Yeah.
A lot of turquoise and natural stuff. Then she's using energy fields, that little devices that are charged up with energy. And that's all going to be up on our website in the next day or two. And then we're going to have, like, gift baskets and all kinds of stuff like that. So sure and check out www.pyridyne, P-Y-R-A-D-Y-N-E. And if you can't spell it, just type in my name, Dr. Fred Bell, on the search engine. It takes you to our website. And we're going to have a lot of cool energy stuff going on for the holidays.
Wonderful.
So what are you doing over the holidays?
I might be... Thanksgiving, I've been invited to about five or six different people's homes, and the furthest one is in Corning, New York.
Wow.
And so I'm making up my mind where I really want to go. My brother's invited me. I have some other people who have invited me. And for Christmas, I really love Christmas because Christmas is such a beautiful time of the year. I've been invited to about four or five different kinds of homes. Where I can go to a Christmas dinner and different things of that nature. So I'm making up my mind what I want to do. It's really a lot of fun this time of the year.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Too bad you can't take your...
My Cobra.
Yeah. Driving in California, you could have driven it today. It was 90 out here in Temecula.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Boy, it's not 90 out here, I can tell you that right now. It was 24 degrees this morning. Very cold.
24 degrees. Wow.
Really, really cold. Different kind of weather here.
No kidding.
Different kind of weather, yeah. But it's beautiful where you're at. You keep on telling me about this weather. I got to come out there.
Yeah. Now, after you go to Japan, it shouldn't be too cold over there.
Where's this at?
In Japan. You go over there for a while. You're going to go over there for... Going to go over there for Christmas time or going?
No, I talked to Ken. I told him, Ken, you know, I have a fear of flying.
Yeah,
he said, Steve, you got to get over that fear. So at the Rochester Airport, they have a fear of flying course. So I'm going to start that as soon as I take care of what I'm doing next week. I'll be at home recuperating, but. There'll be a lot of fun, and I'm definitely going to do that. And something that I'm finding out that we all need to do, and that's have more fun in our lives.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of people out there that are moping, and we really need to have fun. That's what it's all about. Yeah. You know?
I agree. Since I finished my book, I'm starting to learn how to become a human again.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all I could say because after working for 4 years of doing research and all that kind of stuff, it kind of sucked, you know?
Yeah, but the
and
book...
I found myself getting really grouchy and,
yeah,
you know, and there's no reason for that when you have these beautiful people around you all the time, you know?
Yeah, well, you bit my head off a few times, so.
Yeah, well,
but that's okay.
No, I got to a point where I see crap and stupid.
Yeah.
I just don't have. I'm working on my compassion where I can tolerate a little bit of it again.
Yeah, yeah. But your book is fantastic, Fred.
Yeah, did you read it yet?
I'm reading into it. You got to stop and just take it in. I mean, it's not something that you just read. It's something that you just take it in. You gotta decipher it for an hour and then move on. It's a wonderful book and it's easy reading. I mean, it's not hard to read at all. But the information is incredible. Incredible.
Well, it's a lot easier to read than the Rays of Truth book, right?
Yes. Yes. Much, much easier.
Yeah, because the Rays of Truth is a technical journal of what our experiments are, and there's some sections in there that people have trouble with, especially when you get back into the propulsion system for the ETs bit and the time machine, that kind of stuff.
Well, you can... Yeah, we got to wrap up?
Yeah, I guess we're out of time.
Okay.
That was it, 558. So give them your phone number, and I'll give them mine, and we'll get off the air here.
Yes, 585-746-8321.
And we're 1-800-729-2603. I'll continue on with Buddy Boo for a few more minutes on Ustream to see if he's going to sing tonight, because a lot of people like to watch him sing, and I've got a huge audience over there right now.
Great.
Yeah, oh yeah, you got to get your computer so you can, you know, kick into the Ustream stuff.
Okay.
I got three times the listeners over there that I do on this network.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Hundreds of connections sometimes. All right.
Fantastic.
Well, be around Sunday night. I'm going to be doing my can thing on station one, and thank Toy Man and Vroom Vroom and everybody that Toya Man, I guess it is. Thank you guys.